What's happening, everyone? Welcome into another edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast, coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston Studios. Cumberland Farms coffee is just 99 cents any size. That's 99 good reasons to switch. Kyle Draper, A. Sherrod Blakely with you. Sherrod, back from Vegas. Dude, before we get into Summer League, before we get into Marcus Smart, you got to tell me about Vegas. You know, that's like, I told my wife the other day, I'm like, I am Vegas. I need to be there. I may have to talk to the higher
ups. She's looking at you
ups.
Side-eye like, what the hell are you talking about?
Dude, play the tables by day, Summer League by night,
listen,
big fella.
You know the number one rule when you're in Vegas.
What?
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Well,
snitches get stitches. You will not hear me disclose anything I did in Vegas other than cover the Boston Celtics
exactly.
And the three Summer League games, and I went to practice and covered the games.
That's how it should be, man.
And that's all you need to know.
We're grown men. That's how it should be. Responsible men of the community. All right, let's dive into
whatever you said. Whatever he said.
All right. You set the world on fire, though, when you reported earlier in the week Sacramento was preparing an offer for Marcus Smart. Tell me what you know, man. Set it straight for us.
This is the funny thing about them. They were obviously very interested in Marcus Smart, and you look at their team, they don't have an identity. They don't have players that fall into the category of tough guys. They haven't been to the playoffs since 2006, haven't won a playoff series since 2004. They need players who come in with a winning mentality, a winning culture, a winning DNA. But the problem that they're running into is a problem that almost every team that's interested in Marcus Smart. What's the number that we can hit that the Celtics won't match? And, you know, I found it interesting that there was a tweet out there about how Marcus is willing to negotiate anything, you know, even under $15 million per year. Well, that was a dog whistle for every team in the NBA that, hey, if you want Marcus Smart, $15 million a year is the price tag that you'll pay, and he can be yours. And every team just kind of had that look like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that information. Appreciate it. And he hasn't had any offers yet. And that is why. I mean, I think teams are very leery of the Celtics matching any offer. And frankly, no one is going to offer Marcus Smart $15 million a year or anything north of that. And because of that, it enhances the likelihood that he's back in Boston, either accepting that $6.1 million qualifying offer, or he accepts the deal that the Celtics had on the table before the season started that he turned down, which, you know, you're talking $12 million a year that he walked away from. And that, in this market, that's about his ceiling.
Yeah, but, you know, we, and two things regarding that. One, the $15 million, like you said, to me, that might be the threshold. Like, under 15, the Celtics might match 14, 13, 12. I don't know. But over that, they won't. But nobody's offering $15 million in today's landscape?
No.
Nobody's doing that.
Not for a guy who, and again, this is not a knock on Marcus. I absolutely, and you know this as well as anybody, I love Marcus Smart. Love to watch him go out there and dog it out. He's that kind of dude. He makes winning plays. But listen, in talking with different executives and scouts and GMs in Vegas, the one thing that they kept pointing out man after man after man was that as much as you love Marcus's game and know it has value, the potential for him to get significantly better than he is right now is small. Marcus Smart today is probably going to be the same player we see in 5, 6, 7 years from now. And that's not a bad thing. That means you've got an elite defender who can play a role as a starter or coming off the bench and still be able to impact the game. It doesn't have to necessarily score to do it. And that's a great skill to have. But when you start talking about paying $15, $16, $17 million for a player whose upside isn't significant but whose present is very impactful, that's a hard pill for any team to swallow. And that's why you'll see guys like Dante Exum get offered, you know, 3 years, $33 million because he has so much potential.
And
But the problem for me with a guy like that is he doesn't stay healthy.
Right.
So they're gambling that he can stay healthy. And then you look at other guys, Kyle Anderson, who got a nice chunk of change from Memphis, guys who, you know, right now, Marcus Smart is a better player than them.
Yep.
He's a better player. To me, it's not even debatable. And that's the challenge for Marcus's camp. When you see guys getting $9, $10, $11 million and you're looking around like, hey, he's better than those guys. Why aren't we getting those offers? One, because he's a restricted free agent and teams are scared to death that the Celtics would match. And two, Marcus has a skill that isn't necessarily going to get better. It's not going to get worse. He's just always going to be an elite defender as long as he's in the league. But he's also going to be a guy that's probably not going to shoot 40, 45% from the field either.
Well, you know, one of the big questions is, if you're the Celtics, are you handling this the right way? From a business standpoint, I would say yes, Sherrod. But from making an employee happy in an environment where an employee wants to come to work smiling, happy every day, I don't know. Well, we saw Jordan Schultz tweet, Smart feels, you know, insulted at the lack of communication. And I see that look on your face. So
I'm waiting for you to finish.
The side eye look. And so if I'm Danny Ainge, do you have to massage this guy a little bit? Massage the ego when eventually you do bring him back?
Well, let me back up the whole handling it the right way, which is a completely subjective concept. How one handles it may be right to you, maybe wrong to someone else. So let's just get that out of the way. Going forward, once he signs his contract and he sees them commas,
them zeros,
and he goes to, you know, to the bank, and he sees that nice car that, you know, maybe a year ago that he would maybe think about buying but not really buy, but now you're looking at your bank account, you can buy that joint right there then in that moment. He's going to be all right. I don't worry about Marcus Smart having issues going forward, because Marcus Smart is a competitor. At the end of the day, when he steps between those lines, he's going to handle his business. Whether he's making, you know, $6 million, $12 million, it doesn't matter. He's going to be that guy. I don't believe he's a guy that will dog it out there. Because I don't think that's in his nature. And two, I think he's just too prideful of a player. And three, it's kind of predictable that guys would do that. And Marcus, as we've seen, is anything but predictable. So I'm not worried about that. I think Danny will just say, look, it's a business. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, we didn't do anything wrong. We've told you all season long, you are a priority. Yeah. You don't see us, you know, flying across the country trying to bring in this guy and that guy, although Brad Wanamaker is a guy who, when you look at his dimensions, he's kind of like Marcus Smart Light, you know, or Marcus Smart Jr. type. And they do have the same agent, but that's another story for another day.
You brought up the agent.
Happy.
What's up with Happy? Because he ain't making Smart happy right now.
Listen. Players are never going to be happy with their agent until that deal gets done.
Yeah.
So I'm not ready to just, you know, put you know, Happy in the, you know, I got a pissed off client named Marcus Smart category just yet. When the deal gets done, everything will be fine between Marcus, the Celtics, Happy, and everyone will be move on. But I don't think this is going the way Marcus thought it would when he made the decision to be with Happy. Certainly, he thought that he would have a deal done, or he would at least have offer sheets to which he could take back to the Celtics, and then they would be in position to match those deals or let him walk. But again, I think a lot of people are losing sight of the fact that we're not even 2 weeks into free agency.
But it feels like it's been going on forever.
It does. And part of that, you know, I think it has to do with the fact that so much news has been happening with the NBA. When you look at Paul George, LeBron James, you look at Chris Paul getting that big fat payday. And then you look at guys like, you know, Marcus Smart is still out there. Clint Capella, his situation hasn't been resolved either. I'm a little surprised that hasn't been taken care of too. Then you got Carmelo Anthony, who might be able to be had for, you know, pennies on the dollar. So there's a lot of really interesting news and issues that teams are trying to work out and trying to navigate and manipulate for the betterment of their team. And because of all that, Marcus Smart isn't a priority. Because one of the things that one assistant coach mentioned to me, and I had never thought about it like this, he said when free agency starts, you're talking about basically three groups of people. You've got your uber stars, you've got your good but not great players, and then you got guys just looking to get a check. Minimum wage type guys. Marcus isn't like that middle group, but the middle of the middle group. And right now, when you talk about guys who are still on the board, there's still, I mean, Clint Capella, I think, is the top of that second tier food chain.
Clint Capella, yeah.
And so I think once he goes off the board and a couple other guys, you know, then
Jabari Parker's still waiting.
Exactly. I mean, there are guys that you look at that are still on the market that, no disrespect to Marcus, but they will demand a little bit more attention for some of the points that we brought up earlier about potential and age and youth and the ability to grow their games. Whereas Marcus Smart, as much as I love what he brings to the table, and I think most teams do, you don't really see him evolving significantly as a player, because he's going to be an elite defender, I think, for the rest of his career. And that's a skill that teams certainly value. But teams want more. They want to feel that by bringing you aboard, you're going to not only give them whatever it is that you do well now, but you got a chance to enhance your game and be more than you are. And in terms of offense, shooting the ball, I just don't see it. His playmaking is a lot better, and that, and certainly that's something that I think has to be a selling point when he and his agent are talking to teams. But that shot making, which is such a big deal in today's NBA, that's just not what he does.
Where does Isaiah Thomas fit into that free agency?
You know, I love IT.
I know. Hey, check out Sherrod's Instagram.
NBC Sports Boston Instagram as well.
Okay, NBC Sports
Boston. I took care of everybody on that one. Exactly. Mama got that. NBC, mama, cousin, nephew, everybody got that.
You cheesing from ear to ear. You got to run into IT in the airport out in Vegas. Tell me about that conversation.
You know what? We talked for about 10, 15 minutes just about lots of different stuff. But the main thing, you know, he's accepted the fact that he is going to have to sign a one-year deal somewhere to reestablish his value so that that Brinks truck that he still has his eyes set on getting is going to come around his neighborhood sooner rather than later. He knows it's not going to be this. He's already accepted that reality. He just wants to find a situation that is going to really allow him the opportunity to be the player that we saw in Boston. Because I think that's the one of the questions a lot of teams have about him. Certainly a couple teams I spoke with in Vegas brought up was they're not sure whether they're going to get that IT that was so good and so impactful in Boston, or are you going to get the guy that was in Cleveland and LA that was very ineffective? And obviously Isaiah's health had a lot to do with his struggles in, you know, his last two stops. But at the end of the day, I think he has enough talent and enough upside. And frankly, he's going to be able to be had at a price that teams can absorb without having a long-term commitment to go with that. And so for Isaiah, that's going to be huge. There have been a number of teams that he's been linked with. To me, the team that makes the most sense is the Orlando Magic. When you look at the way they are built right now, they have a lot of athleticism, particularly in the front court, guys that can do a lot of different things. I think Isaiah needs to be around a team with great length around him so that whatever shortcomings he may have defensively, he's got guys around that can help kind of mask that, kind of take a little bit of that heat off of him. And let's face it, he gets buckets. I mean, that's why he's in the NBA, because he makes shots. And I look at that Orlando team, they could use a player with that particular skill set. And for him, you know, Orlando, as much as they've struggled, you got to believe at some point that talent is going to come together and be cohesive, where they can at least string together enough wins. And frankly, a watered-down Eastern Conference.
Yeah, they got a couple pieces there.
They've got some pieces in place where I don't think anyone will be absolutely shocked and amazed if they're fighting for one of the last two playoff spots. It makes a lot of sense. And certainly, if you can add an Isaiah Thomas to the mix, that would enhance your chances, if you're the Orlando Magic, of having a team that can compete for a playoff spot.
Yeah, and you know, what they also lack in addition to scoring, but they lack some toughness too.
Yeah.
And Isaiah, you know, as small as he is, you know he's not going to back down from a fight.
I thought when he was in Boston, if he wasn't the toughest, he was one of the two, three toughest guys on the team.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I wonder if he, because when he got traded the second time to Los Angeles, you know, he wanted to be a starter, you know. Do you think in his mind he's still a starter, or should he accept, though, being that higher gun off the bench, that guy that can come light you up for 20 on any given
night? I think
night?
Isaiah is at a point in his career where he hasn't accepted that reality. I think he still believes that he's got room to get better. He still believes he has room to grow as a player. And he believes that should be as a starter. One of his biggest influences is Jamal Crawford, who's one of the greatest, you know, six man ever. When you look at what he is able to do offensively coming off the bench. But Isaiah is not ready for that. And to be honest with you, he shouldn't be. If I were in his shoes, I wouldn't concede to be coming off the bench, because I've proven what I can do as a starter in this league. I led a team to the playoffs as a starter in this league. And people forget that, how he got the starting job. Marcus Smart got hurt.
It was a smart job at first.
And they kind of threw IT in there for a few games and a few more games. And next thing you know, he's in the All-Star game and Marcus Smart is getting his starter minutes but coming off the bench. Isaiah has shown that he can play at a high level in this league and be a difference maker. And I think he just has to find the right situation that is going to allow him that opportunity. And, you know, before people jump on it, I'm just going to talk about Isaiah Thomas coming back to Boston.
Is there any real talk, though, Sherrod?
That to me, it's a great, you know, cocktail conversation
after a few
cocktails. It's fun to talk about, but it's not based on anything real. Isaiah, as I've mentioned before, Isaiah needs to be in a situation where he gets an opportunity to showcase what he can do and reestablish his value as one of the better players in the NBA. You're not going to get that playing with Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, if Marcus comes back off the bench. And certainly the elephant in the room, Kyrie Irving, you're not going to beat him out for big minutes. So there, to me, it doesn't make sense for him. It doesn't make sense for the Celtics because they have a team right now where you can see the way their pieces are coming together. There's a good synergy to that. And I just don't know if adding Isaiah. I do know. It wouldn't work. Because he needs his shots. He needs that kind of front and center opportunity. Yeah, yeah. And you're just not going to get it with this crew.
Yeah.
Oh, which is too bad because I want him to get paid.
Yeah.
Man.
I mean, the dude deserves it, man. He's been underpaid, you know, pretty much his whole career.
His entire career. And just look at what he did in his last season in Boston. One of the greatest individual seasons. And what he was able to do in the playoffs under the duress and the issues that he was dealing with. I'm not talking about just the hit, but also the death of his sister.
And the fact
that he didn't just play well, he played at a ridiculously high level, all things considered. When you pour that much into the game, you deserve to be rewarded. And Isaiah, I remain convinced he has to find the right situation this year, and he will be rewarded in 2019.
I want to talk about Summer League because going into Summer League, there were four guys I was watching for the Celtics. Yabusele,
mm-hmm.
Ojale,
mm-hmm.
Jabari Bird,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, Robert Williams. I want to start with Robert Williams, dude. I got to start with – because this guy, I mean – his start to his Celtics career has just been awful. I'll just call it like it is. Now, you know, he gets injured in his first game. Looked good.
For those are great 6 minutes.
He looked great,
man,
dude.
That's what
we saw the potential, but then he gets hurt, hasn't played since. What's your thoughts on just Robert Williams and his start?
I want to love the dude. I do. I want to love him so much, but damn, he's making it hard. He's making it hard.
Right.
The talent is there. That is undeniable, but I just got to get him to this regular season. We have to get him in training camp. We have to get him in a structured situation where he's going to have the same routine every single day. He's going to have a tutor, one of the Celtics assistant coaches who's going to, or staff members, I should say, is going to be with him regularly, making sure he probably gets to and from the G League.
Yeah, makes it on time.
Make sure he's got his wallet with him and all that stuff. He's a young kid. It's to the point where you don't want to make excuses for him because, to me, I think that may have been part of the problem in his life, that people have just said, well, you know, he's just young. That's okay. He'll grow out of it.
He'll mature.
Well, it's going to be on him. And you know, the further down the road we get where he keeps having these just inexplicable brain cramps, for lack of a better terminology, the more difficult it's going to be for fans to fall in love with this dude. Because I think that when you watch him play, you could easily see him becoming a fan favorite in Boston. The way he runs the floor, the way he rebounds, the way he helps sides defensively, whether it's blocking a shot or just showing.
Yep.
He does so many things from a basketball purist standpoint that fits in so perfectly with this franchise. And then you miss flights, you miss conference calls, you lose wallets, you get hurt. You do all those things that take away from that optimism that I think people want to have for this guy.
Right.
But you can't be optimistic because at the end of the day, before you can be optimistic, you got to be realist. You got to be a realist. And the reality is he's not getting it done. He's not doing the little things that, to me, connect him not only to fans but also to his teammates.
Yeah, to his teammates. And that's one thing, you know, to keep an eye on the rest of the summer league. He still has time, though. You know what I mean?
And which is why I'm not ready to give up on him because literally the mistakes that he's made have had absolutely zero consequence on the big picture, which for this team is winning games.
Right.
And that to me, that's the only saving grace right now that I can point to and say, yeah, this looks really bad, but I'm not ready to trip about it. And I think the Celtics, that's kind of their mindset either. They're not really tripping about this because it really hasn't had an adverse effect on the big picture, whether it's him or the team.
What about Jabari Bird?
Woo!
That's our guy now, man. Hey, he's going to be around, right? They got to keep
him, right? I think Jabari is reminding, I think, a lot of people why when he came out of high school, he was a McDonald's All-American, one of the top shooting guards in the country. Injuries, more than anything else, is why we're talking about him now as opposed to 2 or 3 years ago where he would have been in the NBA. His athleticism is on a different level than most players. I would say right now, if he's not the most athletic player on the Celtics roster, and I'm not talking just summer league, I'm talking about the big boys. he's damn near close to being the best, because he can do things off the dribble in midair that I don't see anyone else in this roster doing, with maybe the exception of Jaylen Brown. But I think his hang time is better than Jaylen's, and Jaylen can get up and hang. Bottom line is, Jabari is doing exactly what you're supposed to do when you're in his shoes. You are making it extremely hard for the Celtics to look at you as a two-way player like they did last year. Yeah. You're positioning yourself to be on that 15-man roster, and whether that means waving a guy to make sure you're on there, you're going to do that, I think, if you're the Celtics, because he has brought a level of excitement and optimism and potential to that summer league team that it's not even close.
Yeah.
There's not even a close second to him.
Yeah, some of his plays in summer league, I mean, just been ridiculous. You know, a guy who's shown flashes, Shemi Ojeleye, you know, sort of a 3-and-D guy last year, didn't knock down the threes like he wanted to. But we're seeing him put it on the deck a little more in summer league. Does that surprise you, or did he have that in his game, but just, you know, with the Celtics, he wasn't asked to do that, because the dude averaged 19 a game at SMU, Sharada's last year there.
Yeah, he's a good player, and I think he's doing things now in summer league that are a little more similar to what he did at SMU, and a lot of it has to just do with comfort, growth, experience, and just really digging into the grab bag and pulling out things and working on those things. You know, he was also in L.A. working out with Drew Hanlon, and he did that before going to summer league. And then when I talked to him, he's going to go back after summer league. And they worked a lot on just his form. Drew Hanlon and also Celtics assistant Scott Morrison, who I also spoke with. And the thing that they noticed with him is the elbow. They're trying to make sure he gets that elbow at just the right arc on his release. Because earlier, you go back and you look at him shoot during the regular season, and I did this. A lot of his shots were flat. He wasn't getting enough arc, getting enough rotation on him, and he's made a point of trying to do a better job at that in the summer league. And so his shot looks a lot better now than it did, you know, last season. And that is part of his mindset. He doesn't necessarily believe he has to score more, but he has to be more of a threat to score. He has to force defenses to respect it. Because last season, you know, basically the scouting report on Shemi was clear. Stands in a corner, may shoot threes. That's it.
Right,
he's going to defend
his ass
off. But as far as offense is concerned, he was pretty predictable. And then him and I, we talked about that. And he said, well, that's one of the things he has made a point of emphasis to get better at, is to mix it up a little bit, keep the defense guessing more, not allowing them to get comfortable. And the thing that he does, and I just looking at his build, he should be able to do this, and I think be effective, and that's attack and finish.
Right? Yeah, no
because
doubt.
You're bouncing off him more often than not when he comes to the lane. And if he's able to finish the way he has shown the ability to in summer league, he's going to be a guy that could be an X factor offensively for the Celtics once we get into the postseason.
Gershon Yabusele. Mixed the results,
dancing
right?
Bear.
I don't know why I'm expecting more out of this guy.
Well, because
more
he was
consistent.
A 16th pick
right,
overall.
Exactly. All right, there you go.
And the other guy that got the 16th pick, Terry Rozier, he kind of made his emergence like in his second year. In his second
summer league. Yeah.
So the thing about Yabusele that I think is why there's such mixed feelings is because defensively, he's just not there yet.
Yeah.
His defense, I think, is far and away his biggest weakness now. He's the guy that's picking up like 4, 5, 6 fouls every summer league game. They give you up to like, I think it's 10 before you fall out.
They give you 10.
And he's coming damn near close to that cap, a little too close for comfort. But offensively, I like what he's able to do as far as finishing off the dribble. That's a part of his game we didn't see much of, even when he was in Maine. And that's a part of his game that we didn't hear much about. We heard about his ability to be a facilitator, find guys in a half court set and things like that. But he has actually shown the ability to put it on the floor, dunk on people, just rocking the damn ground when he lands after dunking on people, and doing the little things that he has to do to solidify himself a spot on an active roster so he can get minutes.
It'll be interesting to see his role, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Tice coming back from injury.
He'll
Robert
be ahead of him.
Williams.
Tice will be ahead of Yabusele.
Tice, right from the get-go,
Tice a beast.
Hey, we saw the workout, him running, you know, that video, and he was one of the pleasant surprises of last season. But, you know, they might need Yabusele a little more. But they did get Baines back, and who knows with Robert Williams, you know, where he's going to be able to fit in. One guy we know who's going to get tons of minutes is Jason Tatum. I mean, we're seeing some of the videos being put out by Drew Hanlon. I mean, going against Embiid, you're talking about two heavyweights, two going at it.
Young Bulls
going at it and one-on-one. And so, you know, I know we got Gordon Hayward back, But there's no way you can take Tatum off the floor.
It's going to be the same starting five that started the first game of the season. You're going to have Kyrie, Jalen, Jason, Gordon,
and Al.
And Al. You go, that's your starting five.
That's small.
You're going to go small. You have to. I mean, Tatum, and to me, it's not so much who starts the game. It's what's going to be the role of Tatum. I think it's going to take Gordon a little time to get comfortable and acclimate himself. And that might not be the best thing for him because I don't think it'll be a situation where he'll lose his job or anything like that. Right. But I just think that the pecking order is about to be flipped.
Is it too?
I think it's going to be Kyrie, Tatum, then Gordon. I think it may not be that from day one, but I believe by the time we get to the playoffs, that's going to be the pecking order. And if that is the pecking order, the Celtics are doing really well. Mm. Because if your number three is Gordon Hayward, who's an all-star caliber player, who can go out and get you 20, 25, 30 points almost any given night, you become a team that causes major matchup problems. And I think that, I said on post-up. I think Tatum's going to be an all-star. I think Tatum's going to be an all-star this year. I think he's, and I'm going to tell you why.
Tell me why.
His ability to score, to defend multiple positions, which he showed from day one. That's how he got on the floor. It wasn't his scoring or ball handling that got him on the floor. It was his ability to defend. And last but certainly not least, who's his ace? Who's the one dude that he is like buku tight with, that he's been buku tight with all summer?
Morris. No, who?
Kyrie.
Oh,
Irving.
Kyrie, yeah. All right.
Listen, when you are the prince and the king is taking you anywhere and everywhere with him.
That's true.
Let's be real. He is anointed the next coming. Kyrie is the leader of this team. Jason Tatum is right there. Well, I mean, think about this. When they were brought all the guys up for summer league, they requested that Tatum come back, hang out, work out with the guys. Not going to play.
Be a leader. Sort
but
of.
Be yeah. a leader yeah. To really get that leadership ball rolling. And Tatum, to his credit, understands his best way to lead playing with a guy like Kyrie isn't to talk about it. It's to be about it. Be present. Be present on and off the floor. Be that guy that the young fellas look up to, listen to, and respect and admire. Yeah. And just make sure that you're consistent with it. And Tatum, to his credit, he's been consistent with that stuff. And then you start seeing the videos of him in the summer where he's breaking ankles. Whether you 8 years old, whether you 28 years old, whether you
Embiid, it don't matter.
Yeah, whether you an all-star at your elementary school or you an all-star in the NBA, he's out on a mission. Everyone is getting to business. And I respect, and that, to me, that is an all-star in the making. When you give everyone the business, there are no prisoners to be taken. Everyone getting some of this.
That's why
he's like, Oprah, you want some, you get some.
You can't hold that young fella back, man. And I know, you know, the pecking order might be, it already might be Jason Tatum number two, you know.
I mean, if you start thinking about just the way this team is going to play and when they were really, really good. When Tatum first got here, there were some people drew parallels between him and Paul Pierce. When you look at this Celtics team, when they every now and then they like to go ISO ball, and they give the ball to Tatum, it's kind of scary what he does. Because he'll attack you 10 times and he might turn the ball over once. He might turn it over once. He can hit you with the pull up. He can beat you off the dribble with the pull up. He can beat you off the dribble with dunk. He can step back, hit the three. I mean, he can hurt you in every phase of the floor. You cannot rest when he's in the building. Now, no disrespect to Gordon, but it's going to take a little time for Gordon.
Yeah, we don't know.
It's going to take him a little bit of time. And I think if you're the Celtics, you are not going to just kind of sit there with your hands, you know, hands in your lap and just say, okay, Gordon, you know, just take your time. We're in no rush.
Nah.
You're going to say, Gordon, you're going to have, listen, you're going to have to get on this treadmill and run with these young Bulls and try to keep up. Because we're not slowing down. And Gordon, I think he's going to respect that. And I think it's going to challenge him. And I think he will be an impactful player. But I just think Tatum right now, I mean, young fella is feeling it.
He's ready. He is ready. All right, man, let's get out of here. Another great edition of the Celtics Talk podcast. One quick note, Kyrie is out in Vegas with the boys, you know, watching them, you know, in summer league. All this talk about Kyrie and, you know, his future in Boston.
But he said he was going to do that. I mean, he said he was going to spend some time with the players this year in the summer and get the guys together. And so that to me, he's just keeping his word. And along with keeping his word, he likes to keep us guessing.
Yeah.
And I get that. And I get that because that's just who he is.
Yep.
But look, I mean, we got plenty of time to talk about Kyrie and what
he's
going to do.
Yeah, we'll talk about Kyrie.
But I do like the fact that he's out there, and the guys are, you know, they need to see that.
They need to see him.
They need to see that.
All right, make sure you subscribe to Anything is Potable. It's our podcast on the 2008 Celtics. It's going to be great. We'll hear from Scal, all the members of that 2008 championship team, so check it out. You can always subscribe to this podcast, the Celtics Talk Podcast, on all your favorite podcasting apps. Ray Sherrod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll catch you next time.
We out!